Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when drug users are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, pushing back against the culture of punishment. The White House is pushing for a renewed war on drugs. The Attorney General, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, and yes, that is his real name, issued a memo to all U.S. attorneys on March 21st, the date of this recording, directing them to use federal death penalty statutes in drug cases where appropriate. The Attorney General is following the lead of his president. Federal law has two different death penalty provisions for drug offenses in which no murder has occurred. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, those are 1. Trafficking in large quantities of drugs, 18 U.S. Code 3591B, and 2. Attempting, authorizing, or advising the killing of any officer, juror, or witness in cases involving a continuing criminal enterprise, regardless of whether such killing actually occurs, 18 U.S. Code 3591B2. The Death Penalty Information Center's website, by the way, where you can find all that, is at deathpenaltyinfo.org. They note that it's unclear whether the death penalty would be constitutional for these offenses, since they don't require a murder. The Supreme Court issued a decision in 2008 in the case of Kennedy v. Louisiana that held that the death penalty was a violation of Eighth Amendment protections against cruel and unusual punishment in the case of a child rape in which there was no murder. On the other hand, that decision was very specific to crimes against people. This is from the decision, quote, "Our concern here is limited to crimes against individual persons. We do not address, for example, crimes defining and punishing treason, espionage, terrorism, and drug kingpin activity, which are offenses against the state. As it relates to crimes against individuals, though, the death penalty should not be expanded to instances where the victim's life was not taken," end quote. So the question becomes whether the federal courts will expand Eighth Amendment protections to include crimes against the state. With the way in which the federal judiciary is being reshaped, thanks to the GOP and this administration, that is a scary question. The death penalty for large-scale drug offenses makes no sense. People really operating in the upper levels of drug trafficking know that their days are numbered. They know that they will likely face a violent and painful death at the hands of competitors, of greedy underlings, of the police, possibly a combination of all three. Capital punishment, on the other hand, that's something that can be fought in court with words. Then, if appeals do fail, there's always the prospect of flipping to become a highly prized and protected informer. Now, death penalty for drug offenses is a stupid idea on many levels. Yet, it appeals to the president's base, because hearing about it makes people like me, and hopefully you, dear listener, angry. We're the ones who always talk about evidence-based policies and reasoned approaches, and we take the moral high ground. And our president's supporters are entertained by getting us to rise to the bait and become emotional. It's trolling on an industrial scale, and it will backfire. The New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, opinion columnists across the country, civil rights organizations, and many others are now standing up and speaking out against the White House's push for more drug war. While the president and his attorney general continue on their march of folly, growing numbers of people are moving in a different direction. Now, the administration is headed toward a Philippine model. In that country, thousands of people have been brutally murdered in just the past couple of years by police and quasi-official death squads. It's a war on the poor, yet the dead are dismissed as drug users and dealers. The police not only face no punishment, they are encouraged and even praised by Philippine President Duterte. Don't take my word for what's happening there. Eliezer Carlos is spokesperson for the In Defense of Human Rights and Dignity Movement, or IDEFEND, and the campaigns and advocacy officer of the Philippine Alliance of Human Rights Advocates. Recently, he spoke at a side event organized by Amnesty International during the annual meeting of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. The event was on the topic of human rights defenders under attack. Here's Eliezer Carlos.
Thank you so much, Daniel. Warm greetings of human rights solidarity to all. I would like to take this opportunity to thank Amnesty International and the International Drug Policy Consortium for organizing this important event that further enables us to bring out the truth on what is happening in the Philippines. I'm with the Philippine Alliance of Human Rights Advocates, and Para is the lead convener of the In Defense of Human Rights and Dignity movement, the one that first responded to the mass killings when they started, even before President Duterte took office in June 2016. And we're now engaged in our second international solidarity and information tour. We went all around the world last year for 5 months, simply because we could not see working accountability mechanisms in the Philippines and our judicial system being already under the control of this of our violent president. And yeah, essentially, we're also extending the Philippine human rights movement, which was once strong outside the Philippines because of the impending dictatorship in our country. Most of you are all aware of the drug war in the Philippines operating outside the rule of law, which has made human life very cheap, the worst human rights crisis since the time of Marcos, one that is dehumanizing us all. As we reported constantly at the UN and the US Congress, President Rodrigo Duterte established a permission structure for mass murder and redefined the rules and institutionalized the rules of and institutionalized impunity in the Philippines. He has popularized the idea that the crisis there can be solved by exterminating addicts and criminals, conditioned our police to be quick on the trigger and routinely circumvent due process, and have a general contempt for the rule of law by promising them protection from litigation, imposing on them forced quotas, forced results, offering bounties to even ordinary citizens, and putting up a reward system. Hitler style, he effectively dehumanized and defined drug dependents and drug peddlers as the inconvenient sector worthy of elimination. Through sustained incitement to hate and violence, he has done so. No? This kill society's undesired or de facto social cleansing policy has led to the deaths of at least 12,000, conservatively speaking, of the most neglected, beaten down, and impoverished sections of Philippine society, excuse me, including children. What civil society has offered, no, are three basic things. One, this includes academic institutions, international experts, and of course, human rights groups. Is to end that clampdown, prohibitionist, and hardlined approach, which never worked elsewhere, and apply a compassionate, evidence-based human rights and public health-centered approach to resolving the drug issue. Of course, radical reforms in our inoperable anti-poor criminal justice system so that justice can flow there. And mostly is an investment in a life of dignity for all, address the root cause. In the Philippines, there is a huge market of beaten down, impoverished individuals predisposed to become exploited into a life of crime and drugs. And we would like essential services and opportunities to be democratized so that everyone can have a chance to get out of poverty. Explaining to this administration the direct relationship between the decrease of crime and drug dependency with the rise of a standard of living. Instead of consulting and listening to us, Duterte demonized us, human rights defenders, and conditioned the public to detest us. He has publicly distorted and sown misperceptions about human rights values, ideals, and principles. He has presented human rights groups as cuddlers of criminals and obstructionists of justice and obstacles to development, and promoted the narrative that the world will never be safe for as long as these human rights groups are here to side with criminals, addicts, and so forth. The state enforced distortion of the truth hate for human rights and human rights defenders has eroded public belief in human rights and secured some level of public acceptance should the killings spill over our sector. He has publicly threatened to kill us on several occasions, ordered the police to shoot us if we obstruct justice, and harvest us together with addicts, using the word harvest. Duterte's message is clear. All he has to do is give the orders, and we will all be killed. This situation has drastically constricted space for human rights discourse and the defense of human rights in the Philippines. So there's no affirmative action being undertaken to resolve the killings, both by the police and two-thirds of the killings of death squads. No, the design of the drug war is really confining the violence and mass killings to the most impoverished urban poor communities, the lowest rungs of the drug trade, really. And the impact of the drug war is several fold. No, this endangers everyone. Anyone can now be accused of being an addict or a drug pusher in the Philippines without having the opportunity to go to court and defend him or herself. That general contempt for the rule of law is leading to the breakdown of our democratic institutions. It threatens to transfigure the mindsets of our entire policing establishment, transforming even the most law-abiding and decent police officer into butchers. Now, we threaten also to throw away all the human rights education work that the Commission on Human Rights and human rights organizations have been doing. And, of course, the damage to civic behavior in the Philippines. The normalization of the killings is worsening our collective sociopathy. Duterte, after several extensions, has finally ruled that the drug war will continue until 2022. Now is the problem is that the dormant death squad network has been unleashed into an entire epidemic. So what is important now is exposing his true intentions. He has no intentions whatsoever to resolve the drug issue. The Philippines war on drugs is really nothing more than a sham war used as a populist tool to sow a culture of fear and silence and to advance an authoritarian agenda. It's clear to us all that this is just a part of a much bigger picture. For us, it's about the falling apart of democracy and a retrogression into dictatorship and the disintegration of Philippine society. Situation today is the closest we have been to an authoritarian government in 30 years, and he's been rolling back the gains of human rights and democracy and civil and political rights had been systematically eroded. He has co-opted two other branches of government, and we have evaluated that his current priorities, his two political projects, CHACHA, charter change, and federalism, is merely a realignment of the elite and intends to dissolve nationalist economic and human rights provision in our constitution and do away with the democratic safeguards and checks and balances on term extension, and also the judicial and congressional review of martial law declaration, and intends to abolish constitutional commissions such as the Commission on Human Rights. He also has a well-financed propaganda machinery that is effective in shaping public opinion, social conditioning, and re-echoing his anti-human rights and kill rhetoric. And, of course, online bullying and spreading a culture of intolerance to criticism and dissent. He has made full use of bureaucratic and political apparatuses to carry out political persecution and silence dissent and criticism, and attacked through judicial harassment and misogynistic public comments, those who represent our institutions providing checks and balances, and his political critics, our Vice President, Senator De Lima, the Supreme Court Chief, now facing removal, and of course our Ombudsperson's Chief, has been whitewashing the Marcos years and painting the Marcos years as the golden years. As institutionalized vigilantism and forced organizing by forming pseudo-mass movements, these are extremist nationalist groups exploiting a distorted sense of patriotism. And this has constricted space for public action for us because this government-funded public actions, rallies, really Hitler-style, they organize in the very same spaces that we do, no? The challenge for us is enormous and unprecedented in the Philippines for human rights defenders. While being threatened as next targets, we must persevere to fight apathy, help Philippine society reestablish the respect for right to life, and reclaim our collective humanity. The difference between now and the Marcos dictatorship is during the Marcos dictatorship, the public was sympathetic with the human rights cause. But now huge section of the Philippine public detests us. Duterte is still able to operate on top of a strong support base. We lack physical and security plans amongst human rights organizations, while government is actually upgrading its surveillance capacity and infrastructure. And where a lot of us are under the watch and persons of interest lists of the Philippine National Police and the Armed Forces of the Philippines. So the total crackdown of political activists started actually and has seen the rise of killings of activists and the human rights defenders already. And this includes the murder of 8 indigenous environmental rights defenders on December 3 last year. So our work now is how to expose the duplicity of Duterte, who claims to be anti-poor but really has no social agenda that will uplift the lives of the poor, whose economic policies will only deepen inequality. So, that basically our role is now to make sure that our fellow Filipinos will not behave like the good Germans of the Nazi era. And of course, accountability and how to protect, provide sanctuaries for courageous families of victims of extrajudicial killings. So, yes, thank you very much.
That was Elisir Carlos, spokesperson for the In Defense of Human Rights and Dignity Movement, or IDEFEND, and the Campaigns and Advocacy Officer of the Philippine Alliance of Human Rights Advocates. He was speaking on a panel about human rights defenders under attack. That panel was held as a side event during the annual meeting of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs earlier this month. You are listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. In this installment of Free Culture Radio, pushing back against the culture of punishment. The Philippine model is no model for our country to follow. The better alternative is Portugal. Drug use is decriminalized there, with effective treatment and social reintegration being made available for people who need it. They're having a lot of success. Again, you don't have to take my word for it. During the main plenary session at that meeting of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs, which was held recently in Vienna, attendees heard from the Portuguese delegate about that nation's drug policy successes. Here's João Goulao, MD, Portuguese Drugs and Alcohol National Coordinator and Director General of the Intervention on Addictive Behaviors and Dependencies General Directorate of the Portuguese government.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Executive Director, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. First, I would like to congratulate you, Ambassador, as chair of the session of the Commission of Narcotic Drugs, which will be the last major drug policy gathering of the international community before the 2019 target date. We have many important issues to consider over the coming days, and I would like to assure you of the full cooperation of my delegation in successfully carrying out our work. I would like to stress, as at this point, that Portugal associates itself with statement made by the European Union. Madam Chair, Portugal considers the UNGAS outcome document, the pivotal reference document, and the most recent consensus on international drugs policy. Its major achievement was the recognition of the need to rebalance drug policies towards a more human rights and public health-based approach, as well as ensure that drug policies enhance efforts to achieve the sustainable development goals while engaging other United Nations bodies in relevant drug policy issues. The upcoming CND 2019 ministerial segment is, therefore, an important and unique opportunity for all member states, civil society and international organizations to focus on consolidating and building upon the operational recommendations included in all seven thematic areas of the document, which correspond to an integrated, evidence-based and balanced approach to drug policy. Madam Chair, we acknowledge the work done under the guidance of Ambassador Pedro Moutinho de Almeida during the intersessional meetings last autumn as a very relevant input to ensure broad international implementation of the seven equally important thematic areas of the UNGAS outcome document, and we encourage the CND Chair to continue the work on this issue during the next intersectional meetings towards the preparation for the 2019 ministerial segment. We commit ourselves to contribute to these important debates and sharing of best practices. The 2019 review offers an opportunity to learn more from policies of the past, raise awareness of the challenges that exist at global, national, and local level, and it should ensure that the UNGAS international drugs policy architecture is firmly maintained as it better responds to the realities on the ground, especially in the areas of human rights, health and development. Therefore, Portugal considers that no new political commitment is necessary, and the 2019 ministerial segment should reaffirm the UNGAS outcome document, which builds upon the 2009 political declaration and its plan of action, retaining what was achieved so far, but taking into account the developments and the emerging challenges. Madam Chair, relevant and reliable data are crucial to adequately monitor progress and impact. In this regard, allow me to stress that Portugal is fully committed with the ongoing improvement of the quality and effectiveness of the annual report questionnaire, which should incorporate more measurable, realistic, and relevant indicators in order to reflect the new priority areas within the UNGAS outcome document. Portugal has always privileged an open and inclusive debate. We are ready to continue sharing our thoughts and the data accumulated over the last years on the results achieved, as it serves as a positive sign that states have nothing to fear and much to gain from the implementation of more pragmatic and human rights and human drugs policies. Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to take this opportunity to reiterate the importance of the engagement of civil society and scientific community in the development, implementation and evaluation of drug demand reduction policies, both at the national and international levels. Civil society has been playing an active role in our own policy, and we would like to stress the great importance of an increased participation of these actors, an element which the 2019 policy review should consolidate, ensuring meaningful civil society engagement in the process. On another hand, Portugal would like to seize this occasion to express and reiterate our deep regret that the outcome document does not address the abolition of death penalty. I would like to underline Portugal's unrelenting opposition to the death penalty in all circumstances, including for drug-related offences. We therefore call on all countries that retain the capital punishment to establish an immediate official moratorium with a view to its permanent abolition. To conclude, I would like to underscore the expectations for an inclusive debate that is open to innovative ideas and approaches, and we firmly believe that in 2019 and beyond, all Member States should focus on in effectively implement the operational recommendations included in the UNGAS outcome document, strengthening action on the public health and human rights dimension of the world drug problem. Thank you for your attention.
That was João Goulao, MD, Portuguese Drugs and Alcohol National Coordinator and Director General of the Intervention on Addictive Behaviors and Dependencies General Directorate of the Portuguese Government, speaking at the 61st annual session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs, which was held earlier this month in Vienna. And that's it for this week. I want to thank the Rights Reporter Foundation's Drug Reporter Project for live streaming the video of that panel on human rights defenders. Many thanks to Elisir Carlos and the other human rights defenders who risk their lives and all they hold dear to uphold and preserve the rights and dignity of all people. My thanks to our engineer, and thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio is produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. We have a webpage at kboo.fm/freeculture. Free Culture Radio has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/kboofreecultureradio. Please give it a like. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.